Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Jason.
My name's Jason, I'm an alcoholic.
Jason.
And sad to be here. I've been here a lot, usually in the seat, and Jeff asked me to speak, and when I got the call, my sponsor called me, and he was like, hey, Jeff's got a question for you, and I was like, what's that? I was thinking it was going to be helping him with something. And he was like, you know, we want to know if you could speak, and I was like, I guess I made it. I was like, me first, like the big times, you know? I was like, who died, or who got sick, or who called out? But I'm just happy to be of service to AA, honestly. I have a sobriety date. It's October 8th, 2014. I just celebrated 4 years, which is the longest I've ever had, and that's no thanks to me. It's thanks to God and AA, and I have a home group. It's Just for Today group on Fridays. It's a really special group. Some of the guys are here, and I look forward to my home group on Friday nights. I really do. I work in a competitive industry. It's a sales industry, and it can be really taxing and stressful, especially on your spiritual condition, to kind of stay with standards and morals. And I get through the week, and I know that Friday nights, like, I'm getting out of there early, and I'm just looking forward to getting up to the Poconos to go there. It's like, I gotta get there. And we have a tradition, we go out to eat, and it's always, you know, a battle of, like, where are we gonna go? I never want to go to the one place that Jim always wants to go to. Just hate it. Just backs me up. It's disgusting. And, it's special though, in a sense, you know, it's not about the food, and it's not about anything else other than the fact that we're all there together, all of us alcoholics, and sometimes there's new guys, and sometimes there's not, and it doesn't really matter, because I know that that's a place that I could just be myself, and I could be open and honest. And, I never could really do that my whole life. I'll tell you a little bit about myself and how I was. I was raised Jehovah's Witness, so went from one cult to another cult, you know, it's a thing. I guess I like them, I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. A is not a cult. But I was raised Jehovah's Witness, and it's very, very strict. It's not so much a cult, but it's very disciplined in the sense that you are in one group of people and only those group of people. And I wasn't able to celebrate birthdays, holidays, any of that stuff. But my father was not Jehovah's Witness. So my father would do little things to go against my mother. Like he would slip me a birthday card. Or he would get like a small, like, stuffed Christmas tree, and he would put that up, you know, Christmas morning. And he would give us gifts, and my mom would, you know, she wasn't raised Jehovah's Witness, so she, like, wanted us to, but not really. So it was, like, this weird thing. But I looked forward to those times, and we used to have something we called Surprise Day. And Surprise Day was on my parents' anniversary. And what it was a day you would get all the gifts that you never got for your birthdays or Christmas or anything. So really, they were just celebrating another holiday, but whatever. It was something I really looked forward to. And I think the reason I look forward to it is because me and my family were all together. My dad works in Jersey. He's one of the hardest working men I've ever met in my life. He's 58. He's got beat cancer twice. He's, you know, had lung problems and all sorts of stuff, and gets up every day, works 60 hours. He's still working as a trade show coordinator, going and slaving, pulling windows out of the back of a truck. It's a very hard job. And for a long time, I resented my father because he wasn't around. My brother's 10 years elder than me, and my sister's 7 years older. So my brother's, he gets baptized in the religion, and he has premarital sex with his girlfriend, and he gets disfellowship, they call it, or disowned, or denounced from the church. And my mother can no longer speak to him. So my brother, so I'm about 8, my brother's about 18. And he goes off to college. So dad's gone, brother's gone. My sister's 7 years older. My sister has a lot of mental health issues. She has severe OCD. It's not the type where she has to touch stuff necessarily. It's the type where she has compulsive thoughts. She thinks that she like throws rocks through windows of cars while she's driving past them and kills people. And then she sits there with those feelings. I mean, all night and days and days. So that's the family dynamic. Mom's Sicilian. She loves me. I'm her baby boy, and she takes care of me and does anything for me, and I can run over my mom in a second. It's a good and bad thing that she loves me. And if you're the alcoholic like I am, I'm a master manipulator. And if you love me that much, I will take advantage of you. I can't help it. It's within me. At least when I'm active, I can't help it. And so anyway, I'm raised in the church, and I get to about 11 or 12 years old, and I really like skateboarding, and I really like snowboarding. It was a true passion of mine. I really liked it. And I, at that time, you know, it was really cool to have like baggy jeans and tall tees and snowboard with that stuff and sag your pants. And that wasn't acceptable in the church necessarily. And what happened is this a brother or my friend's dad. I had three best friends growing up. And one of them moved away, and the other two were the last two, Matt and Ben. And Matt and Ben's dad came up to me, and, you know, he said to me, I can't have you hang out with my kids anymore because of your demeanor and the way you dress. I was like, what? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, why are you telling me this, first of all? I was, like, so confused. And he's like, Lisa's going to take you home, which was their mom. And Lisa took me home. And I didn't see Ben and Matt again. And I sat there with my mom, and I said, what's going on? Why would God do this to me? Why would he take everybody away from me? Brother, sister, sister's can't, she's crazy. Brother's gone, dad's not around, and all my best friends are gone. And I felt really alone. I felt like really, really alone. And I kind of just would show up to church, but it was really awkward, and I didn't like it, and I didn't like the people, and I started resenting everyone, and I really started resenting God at that point. And this is pre-alcohol, pre-drug, pre-substances, pre-anything. This is just me on my own. And anyway, I get to this point, and I'm about 13. I played sports my whole life, and I knew a bunch of kids in high school. And, you know, I didn't have a bad childhood. I was picked on a little bit for my weight. I was pretty overweight as a kid, but it wasn't really anything that serious, I don't think. And, what happened is I turned to whoever would kind of take me in, because I really lacked any sort of, you know, there's a good line about the fellowship in AA, and something that, you know, they say to see a newcomer have, I'm going to butcher this, but basically, you know, to see a newcomer have everything spring up around them and the fellowship really take them in and grow around. And that's what I wanted, though. And I wasn't in AA. I was super young and I had no idea. But I wanted fellowship. I wanted companionship. I wanted people to like me and be loved. And, you know, drunks and drug addicts will take you in if you want to drink and drug like they do. And that's what I did. I fell into a group of friends that's all they really did. I tested super high in math, super high in English my whole life. It's not a bragging thing, just saying. You can kind of see where the trajectory's going. Excelled in a lot of sports and a lot of things. And about seventh grade, when I started hanging out with those kids, grades went in the dump, stopped showing up to sports, stopped doing anything pretty much except what we were doing. And I could remember I would just manipulate my mother into letting me go hang out at these kids' houses, and I would say anything. You know, I'd be like, oh, yeah, is Joey's mom going to be there? Yeah, Joey's mom's going to be there. They're going to take us out to the movie. Joey's mom was getting high with us, you know, smoking weed or whatever and drinking with us. And, it was just this, like, thing that, like, I felt accepted and I wanted to be there. I wanted to be part of. And I didn't want to feel that loneliness that I felt when I was a kid. And anyway, I continued through. I broke my nose a bunch, some from fighting, some from riding quads and snowboarding, and I had been like partying a lot and drinking and not showing up to school, and I had missed at this point, this was probably like sophomore year, I had missed like 35 days in a semester, and you can't really do that, but my doctor was like, people cared about me. And like I said, I manipulate ones that care about me. So my doctor would just write me like notes because he just felt bad for me. And at a certain point, he said, "Well, you must be really, really sick with mono or something, because you're just not showing. This is like crazy." And I was put on at about 12. I was put on a manic depressive med. That's what they called it back then. Now I think they call it bipolar or something. I don't know. Anyway, they thought I was depressed. And he's like, "That's what it must be. It must be the depression and stuff that and the anxiety that's really keeping you from going. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna like homeschool you basically, or homeshore you for like the rest of the year." So I didn't show up to school all that year, and all I did was hang out with those kids on the night and the weekends. And I got my license at 16, and that was like freedom. I remember my brother saying, he was like, "Dude, you just got to get your license when you turn 16. He's like, "That's how you get out of this house. He's like, "That's how you get away from them, and that's how you go start your life." And I got my license, and I was never home. I mean, I was never home. And my mom, she works at the school district, and she's I come from a hardworking family. She worked for the superintendent as a secretary, and basically what happened at the end of my high school career is that I had C's, maybe, I don't know, it was probably like 70s or whatever it was to pass. Every teacher basically just pushed me through, except for math. I still did really well in math, but every other subject they just pushed me through. And I had missed like, I think it was like 75 days my senior year. And I had gotten a lot of doctor's notes, and literally what happened is at the end, so I dated this girl who I thought was my first love. She really was, I thought so. But anyway, she ended up leaving me. I wonder why. And she was dating this other guy, and I got into this verbal altercation with him in the hallway, and what happened is that the vice president, or what do they call him? Vice principal. He stepped in front of me and he pushed me into like, it was like a cubicle, like an inset, like cubicle from the lockers, like a locker stick out past the doorway to the classroom. And he pushed me in there and I was like, get out of my way. I'm like, "I'll kill you and your whole effing family. And you can't say that." And the cop and the state trooper came up because he was there too. And he came up and I was like, "And I'll do it to you too." And I like meant it in my mind. I don't know if I was like just in rage or whatever. Probably because I saw my first love walking away with this other guy. But that's a terroristic threat. It's a felony. It's like not a good thing. And I remember they called my mom. They called my mom. And basically, this is literally what happened. And this is how I think God was looking out for me, or I just got extremely lucky. I don't know, however you want to look at it. I tend to think the first is they said, "We'll let you discipline him, and we're going to let him pass." And I graduated high school. And I graduated high school, and I took a semester off, and all I did was get blasted. I mean, I didn't do anything that whole next 6 months or whatever. Because the only thing I really wanted to do was just keep drinking. Because, like, that's where I felt good, was when I had that solution. I didn't like the way I felt sober. I knew that. Like, waking up sober was the worst feeling. And I always had to plan it so that I had something the next day. Or I had some sort of plan, or there was some sort of get-together. Or, like, my whole life was just structured around the idea of, like, how do I get together with these people or by myself, but as long as alcohol is involved. Like, that has to be involved in whatever we do. If we're going bowling, then I got to get messed up before bowling. If we're going rock climbing, which probably wasn't doing that much, but maybe at that point, it's got to be involved. Snowboarding, we have to have Jägermeister in our coats, like, on the lifts. Like, I don't care, like, as long as we're doing this. And anyway, I get to that point, and I'm working at like a Friendly's, I think. This is how my life's going. And I'm like, "Well, I gotta go to school." So I go into school, I show up to 3 classes, I drop out of college, I have to withdraw. Cause I'm like, I can't show up to this. I'm like, 7 a.m. Like, there's no way. Literally one time, I was so hungover one time, I went to park my car at 7 a.m. So the way that the parking lot in the community college is that there's a parking lot here, and it sits a hill, like, there's like a hill that comes off it, you know what I mean? And so I park my car at this sweet little Nissan Altima my parents gifted me, because I can't save any money. And I park my car, and I literally go into class, and I come out of class, and I call my mom, and I go, it's gone. Somebody stole it. I go, it's gone. Like, somebody stole it. And she's like, oh, my God. She's like, okay, hold on. I'll call the cops. And she called the cops. Cops come. He's like, what happened? He's like, you know, do you have anybody looking for you? You owe money or anything? I'm like, probably. But I'm like, no, I don't know anything. And we're looking, and you know, he's like, okay, I'll start a report or whatever. And out of nowhere, he's like, well, let's just, like, walk around or something. I don't know why. But anyway, I started walking down the hill, and I could see my car. I could see the rear end of my car, and it went down the hill in under the trees. There was evergreen trees, and it went under, and I was like, oh, it smashed a tree. And I walk over, and the car's completely fine. And I go in and I reverse it, and I'm like, sorry, officer. I'm like, I'll see you later. You know, that's like, take off and do whatever I'm doing. But, like, you know, I forgot to pull the e-brakes. I'm just like, I don't know where I am. And that's where I was like, all right, this is probably not a good setup for me to go be going to school at 7 a.m. Plus, I'm super lazy, so I didn't want to do that. Anyway, I start dating this girl, and girls are pretty prevalent in my story. I'm dating this girl, and she's a good girl, but she doesn't really drink the way I do. But she likes me, so she starts coming around more. And, you know, her parents definitely blamed me for her becoming an alcoholic. I don't know for sure if the apple or the egg or whatever, the chicken or the egg or whatever that saying is. But basically, we would just get really messed up, and we would have these crazy relationships. She was Haitian, Puerto Rican, and Italian, and she was fiery. She was pretty crazy. Good girl, though. Really good heart. I could never see it. You know, I was so consumed with the physical appearance. Very pretty girl. And anyway, we would battle back and forth, and we would have these crazy verbal altercations. She would hit me physically. You know, I was like, I love her, and then we weren't together, and then it was like, okay, and then we're back together, we're at the party, and then I'm like, why are you talking to that guy, you know, and then we're fighting again, and then, you know, the cops are getting called, but we just, like, dip out, because we know, like, when they're coming, it's just time to run, and it's this back and forth, man. It was like a Jekyll and Hyde thing, you know. It was like, good, not good, not good, not good. It was basically me, but, like, in a relationship form. And she, so I end up going to rehab at about like 19 or so. And it was in White Deer Run in Allen, I think it's Allenwood, PA. It's out in like the middle of nowhere. And I mean, I was like, I don't know what this is. I was like, but this ain't for me. You know, I was there on like the detox unit, and I'm like, these guys are out of jail. I'm like, I'm 8, you know, 19 or whatever. I'm like, this is just a bad occasion. Like, I just got messed up. Just got to get my life together. It was a little stumbling step. Like, don't worry. And this dude, so they put me, so I've had mental health disorders my whole life. So they put me on like this half and half, like codependency or whatever. And they like lock you in the room at night. It was bizarre. And I've been in psych wards, and I don't ever think I got locked in the room. But anyway, so I'm there, and it's, you know, 8 days or whatever, and I come off whatever detox meds they're giving me, and I look at my counselor, Ali, this very tall African guy. He's probably like, I think he seemed like he was 8 foot, but he was probably like 6'8". He was very tall, though. He was a very tall guy. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, you know, I just messed up. It's not for me. I'm like, I really want to go home. And he looked at me, and he was just like, okay. And that was not the response I was expecting. But he said, if you start to go down the path you're continuing to go, you'll end up back here. And I was like, yeah. I'm like, I'll call you if that happens. I'm like, can I get a ride? And they gave me a ride home. And that, like, never happened. Dude, I've had so many experiences in my life where, like, things that don't happen to everyone happen to me. And for a long time, I just thought, my dad calls me the cat with 20 lives. He's like, He's like, you're on 21. He's like, we don't know how that's going to go. And anyway, so they give me a ride home or whatever, and I get home, and I call Tiff, and, we're done. It's done. It's a wrap that night. I don't know what to do sober. That's a real thing. I don't know what to do sober. All I know is that I need to drink. If I have that, then I can figure out the rest of life. I really can't, but that's my thought process. And anyway, continue down. Things get worse. I've had a ton of snowboard injuries by this point because I think so. I'm intoxicated. I'm on the mountain. I think I'm better than I really am. I'm trying things that I really shouldn't try. And what happens is then I get put, I get all these serious injuries. I'm carted off. I have to go to the hospital. I think I was in the hospital, like the ER room, and I was like 18, probably like that winter, probably like 15 or 20 times for different various injuries. And thank God my mom has school insurance because, it's only $1,000 for the year, max out of pocket. My insurance would be a lot more right now. But anyway, I get put on a ton of different painkillers too. So it's booze and painkillers, and it's just this mixture, and it's bad. It's bad because if I don't have one, it's just this bad scenario. And I'm on that stuff, and then she starts stealing them from me, and then she's doing them, and then we're getting blasted, and then it's like this up and down, Jekyll and Hyde, and then she's like, I want to have a kid. I'm like, yeah, I love you. I want to have a kid. And like, then we're trying to have a kid, and then she has a miscarriage, and she has the miscarriage, and she didn't do well. She did not take that well. And I don't know what to do. So what I do is I leave. And I say, I gotta go. I'm like, you can come with me. I'm like, but I gotta run. Cause I'm so scared. I'm terrified. I'm a child. I haven't developed at all throughout my life. I was 11 and 12, and booze came into my life. And now I'm 20 or whatever. And that's all that's happened. I haven't developed as a human being. And, I run to my mom. I'm like, Mom, what do I do? Because that's what 12-year-olds do. Like, Mom, what do I do? And she's like, there's nothing you can do. And she's like, maybe you need to go get help. And I'm like, do you think? I'm like, maybe. I'm like, probably not. Wasn't really that bad. Yeah. But she convinces me, and I go. And then she goes off, too. She goes to a treatment center. And anyway, so I go down to this place, and it's like right outside Kensington, I think. Keystone Crozier Medical Center. Yeah, that's what it's called. And I get there, and it's like, it's not as bad as Allenwood, but it's like this different scenario where like everybody's just leaving the treatment center like during the day and going down the road and getting stuff and then coming back and like showing up, and I'm like, this is acceptable, and they're like, yeah, man, it's like free game. I'm like, where am I? I'm like, I thought I was coming here to like get off, not to like try new things, And I'm there, and I'm up in like they call it like the private pay or whatever. I have the private insurance, so I'm in like the different section than everybody that's on like the state insurance. And I like really wanted to stay sober. And a matter of fact, what's interesting is that I really did, like, I didn't like the way I felt. And I was starting to see that, like, I could feel that, like, this, like, it wasn't even working anymore. Like, it wasn't even doing for me what it used to do for me. And I was like, man, I got to get sober. And I was like, I got to pull it together. I have to. And I could have got high in there with them, and I didn't. And I don't know what that is about, but I didn't. And I got out of there. I stayed there probably like 20 days or something. And I got out of there, and I got home, and they kept plugging into me there. They were like, go to AA or NA or whatever, but get to a 12-step program. They're like, go to meetings, get a sponsor, blah, 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 right? The same thing. Dun, dun, dun. And I got home, and I didn't do any of that. And I probably stayed sober for like 2 or 3 weeks. And, I think what drove me over the edge is, like, I called her one day, and she didn't pick up, and I was like, that's it, I'm done. Because I just, like, I have no coping skills. I don't know how to, like, manage life, man. Like, things happen, like, the alcohol is not the problem for me. Like, it is the problem, but it's my solution to every problem in my life. So that's a real problem. And, anyway, so it becomes the answer again, and then, I've kind of lost everyone, and, I'm dating this girl in Jersey, and I'm getting pulled over, and, like, the cops are coming, because I'm in my buddy's Subaru, and I think I'm really cool, and I'm, like, going super fast, and I go around this corner, and I'm in the left lane passing somebody, and the cops coming head on to me, and I'm like, what do I do? So I like start to take off and I'm like, nah, I can't do that. So I like stop and pull over and the cop comes up to me and he's like, comes and knocks on the door. He's like, what's up, Einstein? He's like, you thought that was a good idea, huh? And I'm like, not really. And there's open containers in the back. And somehow, once again, he just lets me go with the ticket. And, you gotta like kind of, me, I couldn't see it retroactively, obviously, in retrospect, I could see, like, that there was something looking out for me my whole life. And, anyway, I continue to go, and things get worse, more and more people are getting hurt. And I'm getting real, so at this point, I'm getting, like, I'm drinking a lot, but I'm also getting real into the painkillers. It's becoming a real obsession of mine. And, anyway, I'm hanging out with a lot worse people. I'm hanging out with my cousin, and my cousin's not doing good stuff, and he's not hanging around good people. And, we're scrapping metal, and, I have hair down to here. I'm wearing a drug poncho, that's like my life. And I'm just thinking about, like, are we going to hang out at this dude's house or this dude's house? Because nobody else wants to hang out anymore. And, it's just me and him, and he's doing HVAC, but, we're just like, it's not good. We're just drinking Four Locos all day or whatever. It's bad. And we're hanging around some bad people. And I don't know if I actually ended up owing anybody money or whatever, but the end result was this, was I had this Nissan Sentra, this one. I bought for $800 from this guy. And this Nissan Sentra had like it was going, the head gasket. So what would happen is you could drive it about like 5-10 miles and then the thermostat would start to bang. So you had to pull over before it truly overheated. And I would map out how I was going to get from point A to point B while pulling over. And one of these times that I was doing whatever I'm doing, I get a call from my brother and I could hear in my brother's voice, he goes, what is wrong with you? And I was just like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what are you talking about? What's wrong with me? I'm like, Steve, I'm like, I lived at your house. I'm like, you know what's up. I'm like, he's like, what's wrong with you? He's like, don't go home. And, anyway, I get home and my parents are like, my mom's crying. And my dad's like not there. He's like at the hospital or something. Or he just got taken away in the ambulance and then my mom was going. That's what it was. My mom was going. And what ended up happening was my parents are good people. They don't expect when anybody knocks at the door for it to be anything but somebody that's loving and caring probably or just trying to solicit them to buy something. And, there was these two dudes and they asked if I was home and they said no. And they asked if they had money that I owed them and they said no. And, my dad got in a physical altercation with them and my mom went to close the door because Brindy, my pit bull that I just put down, which I love, she's my baby girl. She went to run out the door. My mom was like, let her go. But then she tries to close the door and the dude slams the door on my mom and breaks her like, or rips her shoulder out or something. And, I get there and I'm like, I didn't do it. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know anything at this point. I'm just like, this is very, very bad. And the people I love are being hurt. And my next call is like, okay, let's go get blasted. Like, cause that's all I know how to do. I don't know how to be there and be like, I'm sorry. And like sit there and pay my right, my wrongs and try and do something to be loving and I don't know any of that stuff, man. I just know that, like, I gotta fix the way I feel. You know, that selfishness, self-centeredness, like, that's just driving me. It's consuming me. Like, I gotta go solve that. And I solved that. My parents, this is their dream house that they wanted to have. My dad wanted to have a two-family his whole life on a few acres, and he started that dream. And what ended up happening is they left. And they said, we're done with the house. We'll let it foreclose. We don't care. You're not coming with us. We're out. And I said, okay, open house. And anyway, that turned into a very bad spot. There's a lot of very bad people there all the time. And I was just drinking like a fish, and I'm consumed with the opiates, and I'm like falling out, and I'm waking up, and I think people are robbing me, and I'm like getting in physical altercations, and Tiffany's there sometimes, but not really, and it's like, she's like still in the picture, and it's like a bad, bad scenario, man. It's like very bad scenario. And, I end up signing my car over to some dude, like, for like $500 or something. I don't even know where that car is. That might come back on me one day, honestly. Because I don't think that was like legal through like the state or DMV or anything. You know, that was just like I gave him the car basically. And anyway, I keep going down the path, going down the path. And I got nothing left. And you know, I made the call. This was probably like 6 months later or whatever. And I call my mom and I'm like, Ma, I really need help. And she's like, I don't really want to see you. She's like, but I'll take you to go get help. You know? And she takes me into a rehab in Jersey. It's in Bellarmine, New Jersey. It's called Carrier Clinic. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but Carrier Clinic still does one thing that not a lot of treatment centers still do, which is called electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT shock therapy. And, you know, my mom basically researched this, because she was like, well, she thought for a long time, she still really doesn't understand alcoholism. Even though I, like, live with her to this day, because my dad's always gone, and I just really like being around my family. And she sees me go to meetings all the time. She comes to celebrations. Like, oh, she knows, like, what's going on. My uncle's in the program, right? She still thinks that, like, I could have wine eventually or something with my meal. I don't know if it's, like, an Italian thing or whatever, but, like, she's really convinced of that, like, that could happen. But anyway, so she's like, okay, I'm going to take you there. She researched this place, and they do ECT treatment and shock therapy is basically like, you know, it sounds like what it is. They knock you out with phenobarbital or whatever, and then they shock you. And they do it like longer and longer over the course of the treatments, and usually you get about 8 to 12 or 8 to 14 or 8 to 16, depending on how many times you've done it. And my mom's like, dude, she's like, do you want to do it? And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I'll try anything. Because I've tried all the medications. I've tried detoxing. I've tried being on, like, maintenance programs for other stuff. And I've tried the gambit. You know what I mean? I've gone through everything. I've gone to the best therapist, the best psychologist, the best psychiatric doctors. I've gone to specialists. I've gone through it all. You know, I don't know how many doctor's offices I've sat in at this point. And I don't know how many detoxes, how many hospitals, and how many times I almost got 5150 or whatever, 5150, what is it? 5152, whatever. Yeah, where they're like, you're a danger to yourself or whatever. I don't know. Jeannie Reynolds used to always be there, and she was like, what? And it doesn't matter. Basically, what would happen is, like, I'd be there, and I'd be like, I'm going to kill myself. And they'd be like, are you really? And I'd be like, no, I just really need to detox. And I get there and I do the treatments, and basically this is, to sum it up really quick, is the first one, I wake up the next day after the treatment and I don't really remember, I don't know, that day. The second treatment I get, I don't really remember that week. The third treatment, it's about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month. Fourth treatment is longer and longer until really, I like the seventh treatment. I think I stopped after 7 or 8. I like really couldn't remember anything. Like, I knew I did things, but I couldn't visualize things anymore. And that's a really dangerous thing for someone like me. Because when I can't feel the guilt and shame of my past actions, I'm free game again. And And I stayed at that place and I got out. And at this point, I had started to build a case for SSI and SSDI for the federal government and the state that I was going to be disabled physically and mentally for the rest of my life. And I filed and I won. And I won. It was about a year and a half later, I was put on disability. And during that time was probably the most depressing time in my life. I would sit and I would cry to my mom that there was nobody around and nobody loved me and I had no friends. And it was literally me and my mom in an apartment in Bethlehem that I'd pushed them into. And my sister was going through her OCD stuff. And she's going crazy, and she's going really, really crazy. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think I can call my sister crazy because I've said it to her face. But she was really, really bad. And I'm just taxing my mother, and my sister's taxing my mother, and my dad can't be around. My dad doesn't know how to do any of that stuff. And it's just me and my mom, and I go, I gotta get out of here. And I get a check. And I have the idea that I'm going to move to Colorado back with the first guy that I ever hung out with back when I was like 13 or whatever. He's out there and I'm going to grow marijuana and I'm going to take LSD and that's going to be my life, man. Seriously, like I'm just going to drink at the bars and I'm going to wear a drug rug and I'm just going to do this. And I'm out there, I move out there, I get this check, I don't know, it's like $2,000 or something. They give you back pay, they call it, from when you filed until you get paid, and you get paid in three installments. And I got the first one, and then whatever, I went out there, and I bought a longboard, I bought a 50-inch TV, LCD TV, an Xbox, and that was pretty much tapped for the funds. So I had it like, you know, I don't even have a bed, dude. I'm sleeping on, like, the TV is more important than a bed. I'm on a blanket. And I'm just doing that thing, and all the money's gone that I was going to farm marijuana with. Out there, and I'm really drinking a lot. Like, I'm really drinking a lot. I'm not even really, I'm on my anxiety meds because I've always been on those. And I'm drinking a lot, and obviously I'm smoking or whatever, and I'm at the bar the one night, and I get done or whatever, and then I come home, and my buddy's like, all right, he's like, we gotta take the garbage to the dumpster tomorrow, because we don't have any money to pay for a garbage service, and I'm like, all right, cool. So he's got like a station wagon, so we throw the trash in the station wagon, and I go dump this garbage. Sounds really pathetic, but this is true. And I go to dump this garbage, and we dump the garbage in behind a liquor store, ironically. And this little Asian guy and his dad came out. They own the liquor store, and he starts yelling at me and my buddy, and I go to just like kill this guy. And dude, I must have been like 160 pounds at this point. I was so soaked. Like I was just so, there was nothing left. I was eating ramen every day for like 6 months or whatever. And, just drinking and, you know, cause I don't have money for food. I'm like a cheeseburger, $8. I'm like, get out of here. I get like 8 packs of ramen. And anyway, I go to hit this kid. I go running away. My buddy already took off in the station wagon, so I have my longboard, and I'm literally longboarding away from the scene of the crime. And I have hair down to here, and this sounds funny, but this is like a real story, so objectively you look at it from the outside. And I'm longboarding away, and dude, it's like so funny, but it's like really depressing. I'm longboarding away, and I have my backpack with, you know, God whatever's in there, and I'm longboarding, and the cop just slowly pulls up next to me as I'm longboarding. And I don't run from the cops. I've learned that. You just, whatever, you ask for forgiveness. And he sits me down. He says, have a seat on, you know, the curb or whatever. And he sits me down, and he just goes, like, what's wrong with you? And I remember this was probably the first time I was ever honest with somebody in my life and didn't try and manipulate my way out. And I said, I don't know. I don't know. And I can still remember that feeling to this day. And I went home and I said, all right, I got to get into treatment and I got to go really try this thing. And this was the first time that I was ever like gung-ho on it, and I was set, and I was like, listen, there's no other way, because this stuff isn't working for me no more. It's just doing to me. It's not doing for me. And I made the phone call, and my mother didn't even know, and I called up the 1-800 number on the back of the car, the insurance card, because I'm still under 26 at this point, and, you know, Obama, you still had health insurance at that point if your mom had it or dad or whatever. And I make the call, and the guy on the other line, he's like, can you get on a plane at 8:30 a.m. at Denver International? And I was like, I think so. I was like, let me ask my buddy. And my buddy was like, sure, absolutely, because he's a good-hearted kid. He gets up and he goes to work. He may do whatever he does, but he's not like me. And he's like, dude, go get help. Go get yourself together. And I get on this plane. He drops me off. I get on this plane. I got a suitcase. I all my clothes stink. It's disgusting. Probably haven't washed them in I don't know how long. And I get there, dude, and I have the worst detox of my life. I detox for probably like 28 to 32 days. And I mean, I was on six, whatever. The cocktail of pharmaceuticals as well as the alcohol was just very dangerous. And I detoxed, and I almost seized out a few times, and I blacked out numerous times. And I had one time that I thought I was seeing shadow people, and I was fighting them, and I thought they were coming for me. And another time I woke up, and this is all in that span, another time I woke up and I defecated myself in the bathroom, and the house manager came in, and I had the shower on, and I couldn't pull myself up. And by the end of it, I hadn't eaten in about 10 days, and I remember the first time I ate, it was meatloaf, and it hurt my jaw so bad. I can remember it hurt so bad to chew. And everybody just took me in at that place, man. And it was a little bit different of a treatment center. Everybody there worked. They were all in AA or NA or whatever. And they would just push that down. And what happened is my counselor was a dude that was just like me. And it was the first time that anybody ever sat there across the table and talked to me about it and didn't yell at me and tell me what was clinically wrong. He just said, we're going to read out of the big book. And he said, here's a pencil. Underline what sticks out. And the next time we meet up, this is what we're going to go over. I was like, I could do that. I'm like, I could read. Couldn't read that well. It was really hard, but I could try and read. And anyway, that's what we did. And I had been on every antipsychotic and manic depressive med and Zyprexa, Seroquel. I mean, the list could go on and on of the meds I was on. And at one point, they thought that I was chemically induced schizophrenia or drug induced schizophrenia, and that I was seeing people and things that weren't there. And I was, but I don't think I was crazy. I just think I was coming off, man. And anyway, I go through that detox, and I get to a point out there, and we're just going through. And he's like, "You got to get a sponsor." He's like, "You got to get a sponsor." So I started. That treatment center had three tracks. It had the traditional track. It had the Christian track, and it had the alternative track. All were spiritually based. Now, I started with the traditional track. I went to the Christian track. I had been baptized while I was in the Christian track. And they took me to something that was called Celebrate Recovery. And I thought it was awesome. And at a certain point, I went into the other track because I was just like, I got to know what each one's teaching. I'm like, I got to try everything. And I learned so much from each of those. But what I did find is that the meetings were the best place for me. So I would always go to meetings. And I remember this guy, Rocky, he was my first sponsor. We were at one of the meetings, and he got up, it was a celebration meeting, he got up and he took a year coin. And I could remember sitting in my seat. I probably had like 30 days or something. I just go, how do you get a year, man? You know? I was like, how do you do that? Because the guys that were celebrating like 20, 25 years, I was like, yeah. I'm like, sure, you're sober, bud. Sure. But the guy that got a year, I was like, that's attainable. I'm like, that maybe could happen. Because I put together 30 days. I'm like, how'd you do it? And the guys in the house that would have, you know, like 3 months or 6 months, I'd be like, I was with them every day. I'm like, that's real. I know that's real. And anyway, I go up to him, and I was so, like, just the anxiety level was through my roof, and I could feel my heart, and I'm like, would you sponsor me, you know? And he looked at me, and he was like, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? I was just like, yeah. I was like, I don't know what that means, but I was just like, yeah. I was just like, will you be my sponsor? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, all right, I'm gonna come down. He lived like 3 hours away. So he had gotten sober there in one of the treatment centers and came down to grab his chip. And this guy would come sometimes twice a week, but usually once a week. And he'd pick me up and we'd go out and we'd go over the steps. And that's all we did was read out of the book, big book, and do the work. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I was just like, I'm just going to do it because my sponsor or my counselor, he's like, how about you try this? He's like, because you've never tried it. It's the only thing you've never tried. And he's like, and I guarantee you, I'll make you a promise that if it doesn't work, you can go do whatever you were doing before because everybody's still going to be there. Different faces, same agenda. And I was like, I know that's true. I'm like, so why don't I try this? And I just continued doing the work. And, you know, we did the first step. And I was like, yeah, I know. But he was like, no, we're going to read through it. We're going to go. And he talks about the allergy and the mental obsession and physical craving. I'm like, that's absolutely true in my life. And he's like, your life's unmanageable. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, do you think it's unmanageable, dude? I'm like, come on. You know? And he's like, willing to believe in a power greater than myself. That was one that didn't really, I just said yes. And when I started doing work with my now sponsor, that was one we kind of got into where it was more along the lines of, it didn't have, my idea or my conception was that it was going to be Jehovah again, right? That was going to be the thing that was going to solve it because that's my conception. And when I started to realize, and I didn't even know what was happening, but basically that I just needed to be open-minded and willing, which I was at that point. I went through it, and step three, he was basically like, he's like, don't think so much about this right now. He's like, just make a decision that you're going to go through the rest of the steps. And I was like, I could do that. And we started writing, and I had no idea what I was writing, but I was mad at a lot of people, and I had been hurt by a lot of people. And I did all whatever he told me, and I went over the fears, and I had ridiculous fears on there. Had a lot of really, really kind of sad fears too, and it was just outlined. It was just like boom, boom, boom. It was like always just like these characters. It was always just like how selfish and self-centered was I? How bad did I act out on myself to harm others to get what I wanted? That seemed to be prevailing in me always. And then it was basically like, how is God going to overcome that for me, you know? And 6 and 7 wasn't really harped on too much. I do remember though those fifth step promises did come true. When I did my fifth step with him, we were at this little park and I finished it with him. And I can remember I looked up in the sky and he's like, all right, you got to go sit for an hour. And he sat in the park, like in his car or whatever. And I sat in the park for that hour. And he was like, did you omit anything? You know, this is what you kind of go over. And I came back and I saw like a shooting star. And I'm like, Rocky, I'm like, do you think it's a sign? And he's like, I think so. I'm like, yeah. And anyway, I go through the rest of the work and I make this list of amends. And I'm doing 10 and 11. I'm not doing 12. I'm not helping anyone. And I have this list of amends, but I'm 3,000 miles plus away from home where everybody is that I wronged. And I kind of just get more focused on, my sponsor now will say, what is it? Romances and finances. I got focused on romances and finances. And I got focused on that and I started chasing the job, the next job, the next job, paid more. You know, I'm not going to meetings as much. The girls, I'm starting to get more consumed with. I'm starting to get more invested with the girls in the meeting than the meeting itself. And anyway, I get to this point and, I lose the job because I'm acting out on self. So I always put myself in a place to be harmed. And I get there and then I get home or I lose the job and I decide that my brother, he's back in contact with me at this point, and he's like, why don't you come work for the company that I work for back home, which is here out in Allentown, and whatever. I'm like, whatever, I don't want to do this job, because they were like, you can be demoted back to your prior position, and my ego couldn't take that, so I just said I quit, and I quit and I moved back home. And I get this new job and I'm dead sober, probably like a year and a half, 2 years or something like that when I moved back here. Moved back in May 2016. So whatever. Yeah, a year and a half, a little over a year and a half sober. And I'm miserable, dude. I'm so miserable. I'm walking around in meetings and just like, this guy sharing about that again. I'm like, oh my God, here goes this one with this. I'm judging everyone, you know what I mean? It's the selfish eye, or it's the great me, or what is it, the selfish eye and the poor me is what came out on the most recent four step. You know, I think I'm better than or I'm less than. I can't ever just be with you and look you eye to eye. And anyway, I see one dude that's really getting his life together, and I'm like, okay, I remember what that feels like, and I really do need help. And anyway, I get to his sponsor. I find out who his sponsor is, and I get to his sponsor, and we talk. And the first thing that comes up after the first 5 minutes that we're talking about is he asked me a question. He said, how's your relationship with God? And I was like, yeah, it's good, man. I'm like, I pray. And he's like, we start talking more and more, and I realize how big my resentment is towards God. And we go through the steps again. And, you know, I had some experiences. I've been to Vedanta temples out there. I've been to all these different masters or whatever, and these different things, and really, what it boils down to is I started to find my God when I started working with another alcoholic. That's really where it happened for me. When guys would ask me to sponsor them and I was able to go through the 12 steps, for my whole life came full circle. I said, this thing works. Seeing people get, you know, I have no time and they're getting, you know, 2 years and stuff. And I'm like, I remember when you couldn't even talk to me. I would have to pull words out of you. And then you're in a room and you have these friends around you. You know what I mean? You're the center of it and you have this fellowship spring up around you. And there's a line in the big book, right? It's working with another alcoholic will become the bright spot of my life or our lives. And that's absolutely true in my life. I don't really, you know, I'm no big book thumper by any means. I read the book. We go through the book and everything. But like I said, man, my relationship continues to grow, and it's like experiential. It's like I have to have these experiences, and the way I have the experiences in my experiences with you, right, in the rooms or with another alcoholic, and I don't really like speaking. I speak all day on the phone for work. What I like doing is sitting across the table with another alcoholic one-on-one, and we're just talking. And it's not even always about like steps, man. It's just about like what's going on with you and how I was. And it makes me relive that experience and remember how bad it was. And I've had a lot of really cool things happen, man. I've been to a lot of places dead sober, and we got the Hope host the Pentipaw State Conference for young people in AA, and that was cool. It was super stressful dealing. I was the treasurer and alcoholics with money, especially young ones, like. You know, it's a lot of judgment and thinking this should go there and this should go there, this whole thing. But the way it came off, man, and there was people that talk, you know, about it and meet further down the line. And this most recent, I had to go to a corporate training work because I had left. So I had left my job, a really good job. I had left my job because I was like, all right, I'm going to go do it on my own. You know, I was like, I got to go try. And I went and started my own agency, and it didn't work. Luckily, my company, you know, because I left on the principles of AA, I gave my 2 weeks, I said thank you, I did all the right things, I was a good employee because AA taught me how to show up and be on time, and they took me back recently, and I had to go to a corporate training, and I had to go out to Pittsburgh for a week, and it's called Live Week, and all it is just kids that are out of college just getting blasted. I mean, that's all. They're in class or whatever, training from 8 to 5, and then they're just getting hammered. And I was like, I don't know, man. I'm like, that's going to be a tough one. It's just me out there. And literally, you know, it's like the way that AA works is that I tell my buddy I'm going out. I say, you know anybody in Pittsburgh? He says, yes. He connects me with this guy, and this guy comes and picks me up. So they're going to the bar, and I'm going to a meeting. And I met with that guy, man, I sat in AA, and I just felt so comfortable. When they started reading the preamble, I was just like, I'm home. I'm okay. And the rest of the trip went smooth, and I flew home. And then I've been working with this new guy, and it's just been awesome, man. It's been a little bit, and working with another new guy has just been really cool. And am I over? I'm probably over. Yeah, I'm done. I'm going to ramble on, so thank you for that.